Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to this new series of Shirim and classes that blend together Torah and psychology. This talk, first of all, disclaimer, is not a professional one. If one needs professional help, you must seek it. The talk is not meant to cure, rather just to help you understand the nature of the Jewish months and what lies within them, and the potential difficulties that come up around this time of the year, and also throughout one's life. Unfortunately, I'm not used to giving talks in psychology, but I am used to giving shiurim. So it's going to be a lot of fun to blend the two. Let's get to it. So speaking of the month of Cheshvan, in some ways the month is a new beginning. It's easy for us to understand this, you know, as many of you are college students in the undergraduate level. And you have a month-long break for the holidays. And then you come back and you restart. In the yeshivish world, it's actually considered a new zman. It's called winter zman. Right before the holidays, it's called Elul zman. And then you have a long break. And then afterwards, the new zman begins. It's called winter zman, which is marked by the beginning of Mar Cheshvan, the month of Cheshvan. Cheshvan also marks a seasonal change as well. The weather starts to change, the days get shorter, the nights get longer. In many parts of the world, it marks the beginning of the rainy season. Climate change. In addition, the month of Cheshvan is also empty of Yamim Tovim, empty of holidays. And for that reason, its name has been extended to Mar Cheshvan, bitter. Mar means bitter, as it's empty of holidays. Furthermore, Cheshvan is the eighth month in the Jewish year. Eight always represents the day after, just like on Shabbat. We have 7 days of the week. The seventh day is Shabbat. And then the day afterwards is really the eighth day. Really the first day, but also the eighth day, which marks the day after. Because sometimes after a Shabbat, a long Shabbat, a fun Shabbat, a person just feels a little out of it, a little bland, a little blah. And that's the feeling of the day after. The day after an exciting day. Very often there's this drop of motivation, drop of excitement. And when it comes to Cheshvan, the same is true. We've spent a month long, you know, we had a month filled with excitement and fun, and many of us spent it with our families, where all we've been doing honestly is eating, sleeping, drinking, going to shul, opening up a sefer occasionally, going to a shir occasionally, going to a nice party. A lot of that. And then comes the month of Cheshvan, which is seemingly empty. It's a big transition for many of us. The month of Cheshvan is all about transition from the previous time period. And the question is, how does one adapt to the new reality? Adapting and transitioning in general is a challenge that many of us face throughout our lives. For some of us, it's more difficult than others. Whether it be the start of a new semester, a new job, entering into or departing a relationship, whether it's weather change, etc. Different people deal with transition in different ways. Let's take a boy for an example. Yoni, a sophomore, studies in YU. He's in the BMP program. He's in Sims. He just had a nice, fun holiday break back home in Florida. He spent all the time with his family and enjoyed home-cooked meals. He was able to go out and enjoy the weather, the nice scenery, had very little to worry about, not so much structure in his day. Every day was filled with excitement, and he looked forward to the next. Makes his way back to the YU campus, and is in for a shock. No more fun in games. He jumps right into midterms. No time to chill with friends. Doesn't wake up to his family every morning. No more home-cooked meals. Doesn't have his bed anymore. Every day is uneventful. The weather in New York is starting to get a little gray. He has to bring out a winter jacket. It's a big and difficult transition that's causing him lots of stress as he begins to develop some mild level anxiety. So Yoni, a Floridian, finds it even more difficult to be back in New York. It's not just a transition, it's also a transition to a place with different climate. I know for Floridians, the weather is very dear to them. There's this dark feeling that begins to develop inside of and takes over Yoni's essence. We're coming off of Tishrei and we're going into Cheshvan. It's really going from one extreme to the other in no time. The month of Tishrei ended off with the holiday of Shemini Atzeret. Although throughout the rest of Sukkot, many sacrifices, many korbanot were offered in the Beit HaMikdash, on Shemini Atzeret there was only one par, one ayil, one cow, and one ram. And the Sfarim say that it also connects to a different midrash that says that on Sukkot, Hashem tells the Jews, listen, I know you're departing with me. Really, Sukkot is only 7 days long. I know you're leaving me. Stay with me one more day. And that's what Shemini Atzeret is. Hashem says, I don't want you to leave me. I don't want you to go back to your life. I want you to stay with me. I want you to feel me in your life. And that's the whole concept of Shemini Atzeret. It's just us and Hashem alone. It's a time that we feel Hashem in our lives very much. It's the highest point, the peak, but also the conclusion of a month-long series of Yamim Tovim, of holidays. That's why it's just one par, one aisle. It's just us and Hashem. That's what Shemini Atzeret is. But then we go to Cheshvan. It's a month that gets darker and darker. And darkness in Machshava resembles lack of clarity. It resembles times that we don't see Hashem so clear in our lives. Times that we feel a little dry, empty, we lack motivation and excitement, lack inspiration. But it follows Shemini Atzeret. And the message is that Hashem tells us, listen, until now I've been holding your hand, we've been spending a lot of intimate time together, but now I want you to fight the darkness yourself. And the question is how? How does one, in general, but specifically you guys, how does one prepare himself for a long stretch of time? Honestly, I think the next holiday is going to be, you know, Hanukkah. That's the next break that you guys are going to have. Quite a while. How does one prepare himself for such a long stretch of time that seems very dark, not fun? As they call it, you're about to enter the grind. In addition, generally speaking, how does a person deal with feelings of emptiness, with feelings of darkness, and lack of motivation? Sometimes a person is just not motivated to accomplish anything. You wake up, you're not so excited to tackle the day, all you want to do is just sit back, turn on Netflix, YouTube, and just binge watch for a few hours, honestly. Sometimes you're just not down to learn, to study, to socialize, to get up and daven. The question is, what do you do? So for the next couple of minutes, we're going to learn just about a few very practical tips of how to handle feelings of emptiness, how to handle lack of motivation in your day, in your lives. And once again, we're going to try to blend together Torah and psychology. So the first thing a person has to understand is that there's something called Hashkacha Pratit, divine providence. Understanding that Hashem is behind everything and that the challenge that you're facing was Hashem's handpicked challenge that He is giving to you at this time. To understand that this is your avoda right now, to serve Hashem and to be productive through these circumstances. Hashem wants you to serve Him specifically through these feelings and emotions. It's a very novel understanding. We're all used to serving Hashem with hislavut, with excitement, with fire, with passion. But what happens when you don't have all that? So do you need to go and try and search for it? Yeah, definitely. But that's not your mission at that moment in time. Your mission is to serve Hashem from the place that you're currently in, even if it may be, quote-unquote, a very low place. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, we say it very often, it's one of our go-to prakim of Tehillim when we're at a time of tzara, time of hardship. It says, Shir HaMalot, Mima'amakim Kraticha Hashem. Hashem, I'm calling you Mima'amakim. Mima'amakim means from an emek, from a valley, from a very low place. Meaning what? David HaMelech found himself in a very low place. And instead of trying to climb out, which I'm sure he did, he tried to serve Hashem and to call to Hashem from the place that he was in. There's a time to connect to Hashem when you're motivated, and there's a time to connect to Hashem when you're not motivated. We all know that there are multiple people throughout history that have never sinned in their lives. They were perfect. They began their lives perfectly, and they ended their lives perfectly. Honestly, if I go around the room right now and ask you, how many of you know those people? There are four individuals throughout history. How many? Who were those people? Who are they? What were their names? Do you know who they are? I don't think so. Some of you will know one or two of them. Maybe some of you will know three of them. Maybe one or two of you guys will know all of them. But large majority of you don't know who they are. And the question is why? Why aren't they on the Mount Rushmore of Jewish figures throughout history? They were perfect. Isn't that where we're striving to get to? Yeah, of course we're striving to get there. But the reality is that we're not perfect. The reality is that's how Hashem created us, that we're going to have ups and downs. And what separates the men from the boys, if I may say, are the ones who are serving Hashem from every situation that they find themselves in. Who are great tzaddikim? Who are the great role models that we have? Moshe Rabbeinu sinned. Yosef HaTzadik, he sinned. David HaMelech sinned. All these individuals found themselves in low places. Yehuda, Shevet Yehuda, found themselves in low places at some point in time, but didn't let that hold them back. That didn't hold them back from serving Hashem. A second tip that a person has to understand is that perhaps when you reach a point that you're not motivated to continue to achieve your goals, perhaps, maybe temporarily, it might be wise to reassess your goals and make those goals a little more practical and doable, ones that you're able to accomplish. It could be that when you're not feeling up to it, maybe your goal shouldn't be to go full force and to do what you normally accomplish. Maybe to decrease it just temporarily until this feeling goes by, until you're able to get back on track and do what you want to do. I always say that guys ask me, there's this pressure that some people feel to go to Night Seder every single night and not miss a single night of Night Seder, which is very nice. And many of you are capable of doing that, given the workload that you have, given the majors that you have. But honestly, I'll be honest, some of you are just not capable of learning a full 2 hours, 2.5 hours every single night. Not capable of doing it. So some of those guys come and ask me, should I learn Night Seder every single night? Everyone's telling me, if you don't learn Night Seder, you're not going to be a Ben Torah. So I may not be a Rebbe, and please go to your Rebbe and ask him for his opinion. But of course you should be learning Night Seder every single night. There's no doubt. But who says Night Seder has to be 2.5 hours every single night? When a person understands that, okay, so I'll learn for a half hour less, an hour less. But if you have that mentality of I'm learning Night Seder every single night, no matter what. Okay, tonight's going to be, I'm going to be learning for an hour, tomorrow night an hour and a half, the next night an hour, the next night 45 minutes. And honestly, midterms, finals time, okay, you're learning for a half hour, 15 minutes, whatever it may be, but you're not canceling Night Seder. You may be reducing or decreasing your goals, reassessing them, making them more practical. That might be something that is more, you're more capable to accomplish. And that way, when this wave of difficulty goes away, you're going to get right back on track because you never disconnected yourself from your goal. Another tip is to understand that these moments come and go. They're very temporary. You just need to ride the wave until it passes. And in the meantime, find something fun to do, something that can lift you a bit, something, a nice, fine, kosher, healthy outlet. Whether it may be exercising, sports, watching a nice game, going shopping, going out with friends, doing something fun that you enjoy. But understand that it's only temporary. These feelings come in waves. And if anyone feels this feeling of emptiness more long term, you feel this lack of motivation, can't get out of bed, not interested to socialize, not interested to go out or do anything, then perhaps you should see someone professionally. This talk may not be for you. The next tip is, you know, it comes off of DBT. It's called radical acceptance. Radical acceptance means, instead of brushing away your feelings and brushing away those thoughts and emotions that are in a very low place, accept them, observe them, process them. Radical acceptance means the ability to understand the challenges that you're facing at the moment, the ability to understand the reality of the situation, and not to make believe that they don't exist. Not to just brush them away and pretend that everything's all fine and dandy, that you're feeling totally fine. Not to push them away, rather to acknowledge how you're feeling. That's why they say, you know, 90% of success in therapy is speaking things out to the therapist and having the therapist listen to you. What's pshat? Why is that true? It's because the more a person understands where he is at the moment, the more the tension is going to go away. The more a person accepts his feelings, the more okay he's going to be. That's the most important thing. It's a beautiful line from Jon Kabat-Zinn. He's very involved in mindfulness. He once said, "You can't stop the waves, but you could learn to surf." When it comes to something like depression, you can't fight depression. You can't make it go away. You shouldn't push off those feelings. Rather, you should acknowledge them. I just want to end off with a few nice thoughts. It's important to know that being an Eved Hashem, serving Kadosh Baruch Hu, doing mitzvot, being a Ben Torah, is not always exciting. It's not always exciting. It's not always, you know, like you go to a kumzitz, there's an amazing geshmak, chulent and kugel, and you may have a l'chaim or two, and there's nice music in the background, and kumzitz, and you're all there with friends, and dim lights, and wow, it's so enjoyable. You go to a wedding, and all your boys are there, and you're dancing together with the chasson. It's not always that fun and dandy. It's not always so enjoyable. Yeah, you want it to be like that all the time, but the reality is that it's not always going to be like that. Moshe Weinberger is quoted as saying that even ruchniut is a taiva. Even ruchniut is a temptation, is a desire. That for some people, that's what motivates them. Only when they're excited, when they're inspired. But what happens when that excitement goes away, when that inspiration just disappears? What happens then? What happens the day after? What happens when you reach number 8? When you're past number 7? Sometimes Hashem throws these challenges at you for a reason. Because Dafka wants you to do His will through those feelings. And in life it's the same exact thing. We're all faced with these challenges at times. And we have to learn how to ride the waves and how to surf, as opposed to making believe that the waves don't exist. Let me just share with you a nice little pshat, and then we'll call it a day. Or a night. Okay, so when the Jews received the Torah on Har Sinai, Hashem told Moshe to warn the Jews, to warn the Bnei Yisrael, not to go up the mountain. Because if they go up the mountain, they're going to die. Because the Shekhinah is resting on the mountain. And therefore Hashem told Moshe, build a fence around the mountain so no one should go up. Fine, very good. Then Hashem told Moshe to let them know, Bimshoch hayovel hema yalu bahar. When they hear the shofar, the sound of the shofar, so then they'd be able to go up the mountain. What does that mean? Why the shofar? What significance does the sound of the shofar have by Matan Torah? So it means that when the shofar will sound, it's a sign that the Shekhinah left the mountain. And once the Shekhinah left the mountain, it's not dangerous anymore for them to go up the mountain. Then you can go up the mountain. So asks the Sfas Emes a very beautiful question. He says, he doesn't say this mashal, but I'm saying the mashal. You know, you might have some people trying to break into the Super Bowl, or the field where the Super Bowl is being played. Why? They want to watch the game. It's the most important game of the year. They want to watch it. So there's tremendous amount of security outside the stadium, inside the stadium, making sure that the wrong people don't enter in the stadium. People may want to try to climb up and go over the top and just try to get into the same. No, you're not allowed to. So come along the security and say, hey, listen, I see that you're trying to climb into the stadium illegally. Listen, whenever, you know, you're going to hear, you know, the final whistle, that means the game is over. And exactly an hour after that, the players are all going to be off the field and the fans are going to leave the stadium and everyone's going to go into their locker rooms. So at that point in time, you have permission to enter into the stadium if you want to go into the stadium. So the Sfas Emes asks, why would a Jew want to climb up the mountain after the Shekhinah left the mountain? The whole point, the whole reason why the Jews wanted to go climb up the mountains, they wanted that close connection to the Shekhinah, to Hashem's presence. But once the Shekhinah leaves the mountain, they don't want to climb up the mountain anyways. So what is this, giving them permission to go up the mountain at that point? Says the Sfas Emes, the message is as follows, exactly what we've been saying. Hashem is saying, listen, it's no big deal to be interested, to be motivated to go and climb up the mountain when you feel God in your life. That's not the difficult thing. You should do that. That's great. The question is, what happens once the Shekhinah leaves the mountain? What happens at the time that you don't feel Hashem with you? So what do you do then? That's when I want to see you climb up that mountain. When things are difficult, when you're not motivated, when you're not excited, when you're not inspired. So now what? When you wake up in the morning, these days you wake up in the morning, Nate is so late. It's so dark outside, even at 7 a.m. It's dark. And you don't want to get out of bed. You want to stay in, you want to snooze for another hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. You're not motivated to get out of bed and go and daven and make it on time to shir, to seder, to davening. And you push yourself and you say, no, I need to do this. Serving Hashem from those feelings is the most important thing. So I give you all a bracha that Bezrat Hashem, you shouldn't just survive the month. You should thrive in the month. You should tackle it. You should be motivated. And even when you're not motivated, go and accomplish every single goal that you set out. And even the ones that you're not capable of accomplishing, so create new goals for yourself and accomplish those goals. Bezrat Hashem, we'll all turn into better people, healthier people, more mature, more in touch with yourselves. And thanks so much for listening. Have a great night.